kids. It's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
I was hoping to do Marvel versus Capcom for today. I was like, yeah. I'm going to fire that up once Ashley goes to sleep. Well, I'm in the middle of Zelda, so I'm just going to finish this dungeon.
Yeah, I saw your tweet.
7 hours I played. Jeez. 7. Straight. Oh, what's up, everyone? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. Joining me, as usual, CJ. CJ, how you doing?
Notice this episode isn't numbered, but I'm doing well.
I don't fucking remember the number. Like, there was a stretch where I did the numbers.
Yeah, I remember that.
And, like, I don't know. It used to be consistent. And then it was like, you know, some weeks we do 1, some we do 2, some we do, like, 9. So I gave up on numbers. I think 263. Maybe.
I don't know. I was going to pull up the SML thing, but I'm doing it really slowly.
263, because 262 was Big D Pinball.
Well, then, hey, you were correct.
Like, Big Dick Pinball. And Ashley's coming over right as I start recording. Can I help you?
Do you have rubbing alcohol?
Rubbing alcohol? Yes. Yes, I do.
It's for my homemade poopery.
Because she's making poopery. I'm leaving that in.
Oh.
Because I don't care.
But is she making any of those cookies?
No, not yet. I gotta let her know that it needs to happen. Volunteer her services for the good of my show.
Is that even out yet, that vector unit thing?
No, that's this episode.
Oh, well then, hey, that leads a perfect segue into Pay Attention for Later, because we're having an interview with Vector Unit. I don't remember the dude's name, so you
Matt
can spell
Small.
That part in.
Matt Small of Vector Unit, returning for his 3rd show. 3. Poor guy.
Yeah, like, what is he doing?
I don't know. But before we get to that, you know, interview episodes early in the week usually lead up to it with some game reviews.
Yeah.
Which,
to torture the people a little bit before they get into the good stuff.
I was planning on having more than the one that I'm going to review, or 2 if Purnell shows up. Yay, editing. But I spent an obscene amount of time today playing The Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild.
Hey, well, you know what? You have an excuse. You spent a lot of money to play that game, so you should probably play it a little bit.
Like, an obscene amount. Like,
exactly.
Early today, I was, you know, Ashley's going to bed because she works 3rd shift, and she has to get a nice head start today because we're getting the fucking blizzard coming through here. And I'm like, yo, as soon as she goes to bed, I'm gonna fire up this one game that I have for review and put a couple hours into it and have it for the show tonight. I just want to finish this shrine on Zelda. Famous last words. Let me finish this level. 7 hours later, I'm recording this show, and Zelda is paused.
Yeah, that's brutal. I'm glad that I'm not the one recording the episodes, because, wow, that blizzard must be really affecting Comcast right now.
Why, is it screwing up?
It's back now, but it was during your story.
Oh,
I heard most of it, though.
God, I swear to God, if this starts fucking up again...
I heard most of what you said, so
I think I'm good. Oh, Jesus. Like, this is my luck that I need shit to
As soon as you actually start doing something important, that's when the internet wants to fuck up for you.
Yeah. It went down briefly earlier today, but it seems like things have somewhat improved over the past weekend. But
oh, yeah, that was brutal last episode.
If it fucking does it again tonight during a show, I'm gonna be so pissed.
Yeah, you're gonna lose it pretty bad.
And then I'll go play more Zelda.
Just like, fuck the show, it's Zelda time. I don't need this shit in my life.
Like, I'm legit hoping that things will be okay with uploading the show tomorrow with the snow coming through. Like, I hope there won't be any issues.
I hope not either.
Because they're calling for anywhere from, like, 12 to 20 inches in my area, with possibility for higher elevations to get, like, 2 goddamn feet of snow.
Yeah, that shit. I used to think snow was fun, and now it's just like, I hate it so much.
I mean, I still like snow, but.
Oh, well, don't get me wrong.
It's nuts.
I don't mind looking at snow, but I don't like snow. Like, I like the way it looks, but that's about it.
Like, we had like 5 inches or something the other day. It's like, yay.
Yeah, that's snow. Okay. That's okay. Nifty. The only day you really want snow, though, is Christmas. Like, and then it's always like, it works around it. Like, on Christmas, it's not snowy, and then the next few days after, it's like, it's snowy now. And the days before, it's snowy, but not on the day.
We're going to have a white Christmas, and then, like, Christmas Day rolls around, it's 45 degrees and raining.
Yeah, it's like, we're going to have a gray Christmas.
Gotta love it. But yeah, fucking Zelda. Jesus, my life. That is my life right now.
This sounds fun, actually. So,
did you hear that it got a middling review?
From the guy that's known to do that? Yes,
I heard Jim Sterling gave Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild a 7 out of 10.
Which is still not bad, but...
No, it's not bad at all, but there's a lot of people pointing out some legitimate issues with his review. First off, he gave Horizon Zero Dawn a 9.5 out of 10, which, again, great game. I don't think it's as good as Zelda, because fucking Zelda. And people are also pointing out that Jim Sterling is routinely a very vocal critic of Nintendo for their copyright stances and everything else. And pretty much everyone thinks this is just Jim Sterling giving Nintendo a fuck you, just because he can.
I mean, it's not going to do much compared to every other review that's like, given it so much.
Oh no, now it has a 97 on Metacritic.
It has a what on Metacritic?
A 97.
Well, I barely heard that. You know what's happening.
No! I'm gonna lose my mind.
Like, I hate pointing it out because it just keeps interrupting the show, but it gets so bad that I can't hear what you're saying.
I'm seriously gonna lose my shit if this happens tonight.
Back to the 4 white bars. Let's keep going. Try to get it as good as possible.
On this episode of the SML podcast, Comcast is a motherfucker.
The Comcast podcast, where we talk about how shit their connection is.
It's so shitty. But yeah, Jim Sterling, no one knows if he's just trying to get drama going or if, you know, he could have legitimately not liked the game. Or
yeah, I mean, it's possible. It's unlikely, considering how many people do. But, you know, there's always going to be those people that are not with the majority when it comes to games.
I don't know. It's just from reading his review, I didn't agree with, like, any of his criticisms. But that's just me, so...
And that's what reviews are. They're always opinions, so...
Yep. Opinions are like assholes, and his is shitty. Anyway, we got some games to talk about today, so let's just dive right in. Our first game to talk about tonight is called Sublevel Zero Redux, developed by Sigtrap Games, published by Merge Games. It released March 9th on Xbox One and PS4 for $19.99. Sublevel Zero Redux is a first-person, roguelike, 6-degree-of-freedom shooter set in a universe where reality is falling apart. Take control of a lone gunship pilot whose mission is to loot and craft ancient technology, descend into a vast underground facility, fighting through procedurally generated zero-gravity environments to recover the technology you and your clan need to survive. CJ, what did you think of Sublevel Zero?
The gameplay is fun, but difficult to get used to if you aren't already experienced with the aerial combat style. Enemies can literally be in any direction because they're flying and so are you, which makes for a lot of turning about and just trying to find where they are while you're getting hit notifications. So if you're not experienced with this, it's going to be a little bit more difficult.
Well, that's the beauty of 6 degrees of freedom.
Yeah, that's brutal for me because I'm not that used to it, but I was still having fun. They range from the enemies range from smaller enemies that don't do much damage to large enemies that can take away quite a bit of health in a single shot. I do appreciate that unlike other aerial combat games, you're not slowly gliding when you're trying to stay in place. So that makes shooting moving targets easier. I know that a lot of those games have like that momentum or simply just the fact that like certain vehicles will glide forward while you're trying to pull back to just stay still for 5 seconds. And in this game, you can just stand still at any point. It's almost like it's just a first-person shooter, and you can just go anywhere like a flying camera.
Nice. So but there's no stop drift.
Exactly. I didn't pick up on the story too much, and while I tried to read it, it didn't really process in my mind, and I forgot it all almost immediately. Like, I would read it, and then I'd press A for the next page, and then I'd be like, what did that say again? It just, none of it stuck.
Those certainly were words.
It was a lot of words, too. They really opened up with a lot of words. I wish there would have been, like, I don't know, some cutscenes with some dialogue or something, rather than just a screen with some words. And some pretty artwork in the back. The graphic style looks very nice in this game. It's smooth yet blocky, which doesn't really make sense until you see the game yourself, but it actually looks really good. There is a tutorial mode, however, it glitched at the point that it told me to equip the weapon, so I had to figure out the rest of the game from there. I equipped the weapon, and it simply just locked up, like it wouldn't continue with the tutorial process. It just kept saying, press Y to equip the weapon, even though I did it. And then I tried unequipping and re-equipping, and nothing would work, and I couldn't progress. So I had to figure out the game myself for the most part, because the only thing you can do is really skip the tutorial, unless you want to restart the game and go through all that dialogue again. But
yeah.
You can change your orientation with the D-pad, which helps in this game, because sometimes the game likes to change it for you, which is really annoying. So it being able to use the D-pad to like change the way you're... your y-axis or whatever, your orientation, it helps. The map, which you can access with the back button, I don't know what the back button is called on the Xbox One controller, so I just call it the back button. it's a little hard to read because it is fully 3D and it takes a bit of getting used to, and you can easily become lost trying to follow the map. But, you know, whatever, 3D map, it's going to take some getting used to. This game is a lot of taking or getting used to stuff. And I imagine that people that are more fans of the aerial combat genre will love this game a lot more. Personally, I thought that the game had some solid points and some not so solid ones. And I would have to recommend giving it a try at least.
That sounds good. Yeah, it looks interesting.
Yeah, it's a very nice looking game. I'll give them that. I don't know how you can make a game blocky yet look smooth.
Makes magic. No sense to me. A lot of magic.
Somehow.
Yeah, I definitely want to pick it up myself, though, sometime. So, might have to do that.
You should.
Maybe I will.
Give it a try.
Maybe I will.
Is there a demo? I doubt it.
What are you going to do? Maybe I will.
I don't think they release demos on Xbox One much anymore, so...
Yeah, like one or two games.
Let's say just try a demo. Yeah, exactly.
I
miss the days when they were all at them.
Alright, next game to talk about is called Alien Path, developed by App Explorer. It is available now on iOS and Android as a free-to-play title. The game does have in-app purchases for in-game gems or bonuses... including a VIP option. It's like a 15-day pseudo-subscription thing where you like get daily bonuses and extras. Alien Path combines RPG, puzzle, path planning, words, and strategy for an out-of-this-world gaming experience. Players must eliminate enemies by cleverly navigating the aliens on a path to destroy invading robots. Every move counts, so set a path and pave your way to rescuing your planet and eventually the galaxy. This is a really unique take on puzzle games for mobile. The game takes place where you are dropped into a field, like a grid-based field. I want to say, like, God, 7x7, 6x6, something like that. I should probably load up the game just so I know exactly.
Yes.
This is planning ahead.
Taking notes is what I do to do this.
When I imagined talking about the game, I didn't really think I would mention the exact dimensions of the play field, but now that I'm thinking about it, I should probably, you know, mention stuff like that. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. 7x7 board where your alien is dropped in along with some enemy robots that you have to destroy. You can do that a variety of different ways. Most notably is, you know, running into them, just charging into them and dealing damage or destroying them. Movement is you can swipe up, down, left, or right, and your alien moves in that direction. You know, if an alien isn't in that path, that could be a problem, which is where the strategery comes in, because also dropped onto the grid are a handful of arrow icons. There can be blocks there. There could be green, I think they're not potions, they're orbs of some kind. And what you need to do is guide your alien into the arrows, which will change your direction and give you an added damage boost. You're basically picking up momentum as you hit these arrows, and your goal is to ricochet around the map, hitting different arrows and whatever else to plow into the enemies. You can tap on the arrows to change them from up, down, left, right, so you can, you know, that's where the planning comes in trying to, you know, visualize, okay, he's going to go up, left, down, right, up, hit the guy, hit another arrow, left, back, down, hit the other enemy. So it's basically you're trying to create big chain reactions to take out as many enemies as you can. Clearly, not every move you're going to be able to hit enemies, so that's what those green orbs are there for. If you hit those orbs, they basically do a, like, a ranged attack to whatever the closest enemy is.
Oh, okay. That makes sense.
So that way you don't always have to run into enemies. There's a variety of different ways to boost the strength of not only your alien character, but also the damage bonus that you get off of hitting the arrows, as well as the damage that the orbs will do to the nearby monsters, robots. There are a handful of, you can equip, I believe, 3 different cards at once, because, of course, every game these days has to have some kind of card mechanic in it.
Yeah, exactly. If it doesn't have cards, it's not a good game.
Pretty much. But there are dozens upon dozens of different cards that you can unlock that have all these different kind of alien monsters that give you bonuses to your energy, your health, your attack, the amount of health that you recover if you collect a potion, the amount that the orbs do. They'll just give you bonuses to everything, as well as have their own unique abilities. Like the first one you get is basically just, you know, drag the guy onto an enemy and it just does a set amount of damage. I've seen things where it turns all of the concrete blocks, which normally you hit them and you just stop, it can turn them into electrified blocks that, you know, send out an electric pulse around it, and if any enemies are nearby, they get damaged by it. There was one that I had that I used a few times where I would drag the card onto the grid, and it would destroy every block. It would do a set amount of damage to every enemy and to myself.
Oh.
So that was something that you kind of had to, you know, think before using. It's like, do I have enough health to use
this? This is where the planning comes in.
Yes. And then one I've been using a lot allows you to drag him onto any open spot that has an empty tile, not an already destroyed tile, or, you know, there can't be a potion or an orb or anything else there, that you can create an arrow that can help you create these chains. Cool. Gameplay is ridiculously addictive. I could find myself sitting down, do all the daily challenges, and still just sit around wanting to play more. It didn't seem too reliant on spending real money in the game, but, you know, Lord knows, the more you play games like this, the harder it is to level up or to purchase upgrades or whatever else. So there are the options if you want to buy in-game money or gems. You could use the gems to upgrade the cards that you can equip, because there's like 6 different elements there, and you need different ones to upgrade different ones. You also need money to do all that stuff, the in-game money. You use money as well as different orbs to power up your alien. You can earn DNA in the game to unlock additional aliens, or to like unlock a new tier of your own alien. There's just a lot to do in the game. As a free-to-play game, I have to absolutely recommend giving this game a try. I've, you know, since getting my iPhone, I've downloaded nearly every new game that I see an ad pop up for in the game. I'm like, hey, that looks interesting. Let me try it out. Most of them I'll play it once and then never go back. I have gone back to Alien Path, reliably and multiple times a day since I've gotten it. It's just a really, really fun game. It doesn't seem super reliant on needing real money to play. And even stuff like if you're out of energy and you can't afford to do another level, you can watch an ad and get energy back.
Hmm. Okay, that's pretty... So I've seen that in a lot of those free-to-play games.
So while there is, you know, clearly games like that need to make money, it's not like super in-your-face about it. And it does give you other ways to get stuff done instead of using real money through the magic of advertising.
And ads still give them money, too. So
yeah,
it works.
So you just ignore your phone for 30 seconds, and then you get to play another level.
Exactly. And they make a little bit of, a few cents every time somebody views an ad, something like that. So,
but yeah,
it's not bad.
Alien Path, you know, it's hard to give reviews to free-to-play games because it's free, so I can't really say buy it. But I think it's definitely worth downloading and playing the game, because it's a lot of fun. And it's a fun, unique twist on puzzle games. It's not just tap 3 matching colors and move on.
Yeah, I don't think there's any real game that's free to play that you can't give a at least try.
Yeah. So I wholeheartedly recommend this one. It is a lot of fun. So... good stuff there. We are now going to go... earlier today, I recorded an interview... not an interview, but a review with our friend Jacob Garner. We normally read his reviews, but he called into me earlier today. So let us, through the magic of editing, cut to that one right now. Next game to talk about is called World of Darkness Preludes, Vampire and Mage. Developed and published by White Wolf Entertainment. Released February 16th on Steam for $9.99. The classic role-playing games Vampire the Masquerade and Mage the Ascension enter the digital present with a dual pack of interactive fiction by a few of today's most interesting fantasy writers. Includes Vampire the Masquerade, We Eat Blood, and All Our Friends Are Dead, as well as Mage the Ascension Refuge. Our good friend, quote-unquote, Jacob Garner covered this one. And Jacob, welcome to the show. How are you doing?
I'm doing okay.
Been a long time since you've been on.
Probably since the show was in like double digits of episodes.
Back when we called you Sweatpants.
I thought I was Moo Moo.
No, you were Sweatpants.
Okay.
Shut up, Sweatpants.
I'll go with Sweatpants.
So you're covering two, interactive novels, visual novels. How would you describe these?
They're visual novels is putting it generously. I put it closer to a text adventure from way back. Well, I'd call it a text adventure, but at the same time, it's more like a choose your own adventure book.
Okay.
So, I mean, the vampire, or Vampire the Masquerade, We Eat Blood and All of Our Friends Are Dead, which is an awesome title for a game.
Which, by the way, I love how many colons are in these games. Vampire, colon, The Masquerade, colon, We Eat Blood and All Our Friends Are Dead, and then Mage, colon, The Ascension, colon, Refuge.
Exactly. Yeah, apparently hyphens don't exist. the Vampire game was far more, I found it to be more visual than the other one, because there was actual, like, art, and there was a real screen that you're looking at, because the whole thing is it's done through the viewpoint of a cell phone.
Okay.
And so, like, you have that you're staring at, but then you have a bunch of artistic friends who then send you, like, their paintings that they're working on, so you get, like, art interspersed without, and because I like modern art, I thought it was pretty cool. Mage the Ascension has some visual stuff, which is, I think you'd find it better to look at if you were high, maybe. I could see people getting headaches from this stuff.
Interesting.
Like, it looks like somebody added, like, color to, like, a TV static screen. And it's supposed to, I think it has to do with, like the magic and, like, the, I don't know. I didn't like Mage the Ascension as much. We'll get to that.
You're very good with words today. There's this,
I'm better at writing than I am. I'm better at writing
and then there's
than I am talking.
Oh.
you really just had to bring up the. It's been forever since you got to make fun of my sighing.
It's been way too long.
How long would you say it's been?
Kind of long.
Like, if you could measure it in a sigh, it would be that long. I forgot how much I hate you.
Anyway, games.
Did you swallow your microphone?
Yes. Anyway, games.
All right, so finally I'm actually going to be coherent. This review is only 3 to 5 podcasts late, but I finally got through Worlds of Darkness, Preludes, Vampire, and Mage, which you already said is created and distributed by White Wolf Entertainment, but they recently just got bought out by, it's like Paradox Interactive or something like that.
Oh, nice.
It's a Swedish company, from what I understand, but I don't know how that really affects anything, but whatever. You actually get two games with this. It's the two games of interactive fiction, which is a lot like those choose-your-own-adventure books that you'd read as a kid because everything else in the school library was boring. But hey, whatever. You got you to read much to the chagrin of your third-grade teacher, Mrs. Hurt. You then couldn't keep track of your reading progress because the page numbers were all over the place. Maybe it was me. Anyway, you get two titles, the awesomely named Vampire the Masquerade, We Eat Blood, and All of Our Friends Are Dead, and the generically named Mage the Ascension, Refuge. I'm going to refer to them as Vampire and Mage throughout the rest of this review to make it easier for everyone.
Okay.
Vampire presents the story of you, a new vampire, trying to make sense of what has happened to you and fleeing the constant danger that hunts you, whether it is escaped monkeys from a lab, Trump supporters, or centuries-old vampire hierarchy. The story is presented through text messages on your phone with interesting art throughout, giving you a visual idea of what you and your friends are seeing. The story is fairly interesting throughout, with the art, with the writing really selling the danger, but also being extremely poetic at times. I enjoyed it more than I thought it would for a story told through text messages, although there were certain parts, especially the endings, that resulted in your death that didn't make sense why they would have been texted. Like, there's a scene where it's like you go off to fight this vampire, and then you're just like, oh, I shouldn't have done it. He overpowered me. Well, bye. Like, I'm sorry, but if I'm dying from my wounds, I don't think I would have had time to be able to text this. I'm just putting that out there. I mean, but then again, I'm also not a vampire, so I don't know if they have super texting abilities. So it took me a little under 4 hours to get to the quote-unquote end, although there's obviously more endings to the game. I feel like the game is definitely worth another playthrough. The ambient music played intermittently wasn't bad, but to be honest, I don't remember that much because I was usually too zoned out, staring at the phone on my computer screen, which I kind of feel like is a weird thing, like, with commentary, like, you know, we're so zoned out, like, staring at our phones all the time, that I was actually just, like, so focused on the phone that was on my screen, I didn't notice anything else.
Sorry, well, I'm on Reddit right now, huh?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, to be fair, like, I know I'm boring, but, you know.
Very, on, yeah. Actually. No.
Thank you.
I don't get to bust your balls anymore. I need this.
I know you do. We probably should start having me on the show more often to read my reviews just so you can make fun of me.
Only if you get a fucking better microphone or something, because it sounds like you're talking to me from inside a closet.
I have to use my iPhone 6S, man.
Are you using a headset?
No.
Are you on speakerphone?
Yeah.
Well, there you go. Try what? Talking like you're just on a phone.
Oh, okay.
Is that better?
Significantly.
Oh, okay.
Because when you're on speakerphone...
Should we keep this review going like this?
Oh, or? we're keeping it going.
We are live.
Continue okay. on. Continue on, you piece of shit.
Okay. The only issue that I have with the game is that there are times when save points are too far apart and you have to keep going through multiple choice screens, eating up, which feels like 4 to 5 minutes each time, just to die again and go back to where you were 20 minutes ago. It's annoying, but it's not the worst thing I've ever encountered. If there was anything I wish that they'd add, it would be to fast track to previous parts where you had to make a choice. Kind of like when you were a kid and you would put a bookmark on the page where there were three possible choices to make just in case you made a shitty decision. You tell yourself that you didn't really mean to choose that page, and then you go back to make a different decision.
Dude, when I read the Lone Wolf series of books as a kid, I had, like, fingers in 40 different sections of the book because I'm like, well, let me check this section. Nope, let me go back. Fuck, where was
yeah.
I?
Yeah, I used to
I didn't have bookmarks. Like, I just had fingers.
Well, I can't help it. Well, like, you 10 know,
different places.
I was so privileged, Joe, that I had bookmarks. What can
Fuck
I say?
Off. Fuck off.
You know, I know you came from the poor side of town having to use your fingers as bookmarks. Apparently you had 40 fingers, though, which is pretty impressive.
Yeah. I tried. I would get some help.
I'm just imagining, like, your entire family just sitting around there, like, you, like,
can you just their pick a goddamn page already, Joseph?
Anyway, definitely check out the vampire side of the bundle. I didn't enjoy the mage game as much, but that doesn't mean it's a bad game or not worth your time. This game very much reads like a choose your own adventure book, although it felt a little more heavy-handed with current events than Vampire did, which, from what I understand, is what the Worlds of Darkness stuff has always been, at least since the 1990s. If you go up onto the Steam page discussions, first off, let me warn you, it's a shit show.
Shocking.
Yeah, well, it's just like there's a bunch of like far right people like arguing about how they don't like, you know, leftist stuff in their games, and it's I would just avoid it at all costs. But the writing for the story is fine, but I felt that it threw far too much new information at the beginning instead of trying to ease you into the world. To be fair, such a presentation makes sense for you, the protagonist, who knows nothing about the world of magic. Yes, and that is with a K on the end. Mm. And you're suddenly thrust into a new world with no idea of who to trust. I felt the writing was a little bland, but it's worth a spin. I have two complaints about the game. When you die, the text scrolls by too quickly for you to read, but before telling you that you've died. Which is as comparison to Vampire, which you'd get to see all the messages... except like maybe one, because sometimes people would text you as you're dying, which was kind of weird.
Fun.
Yeah, but in this one it's just like, oh, like all of a sudden the text will just blur right by, you don't get a chance to read it, and then it's like, oh, you died, go back. So that was pretty annoying, because it's just like, if you're trying to get me like into your work, like into your writing style, I really want to read what, you know, is happening. And then there's a distorted background that is incredibly distracting, which I discussed before, and I could see it giving headaches to players. They really need to find a way to disable the background, but otherwise the game's a decent experience. I believe that World of Darkness Preludes Vampire Mage is definitely worth picking up if you enjoyed Choose Your Own Adventure books when you were a kid. It harkens back to the old text adventures that you'd have to use your imagination, and for $9.99 for two games, it's definitely worth it. I enjoyed Vampire more than Mage, but they're both worth playing, and I'd like to see more of these titles from these creators in the future.
Nice. Sounds good. I know when you first picked this up, you were asking me about some kind of controversy going on. What's all that about?
From what I can tell, of course, keep in mind all of this is gleaned from the Steam pages, but there was some harassment between the authors, whether it was, and I couldn't really make sense of their own narrative, but it seems as though the authors were not pleased with people who didn't like the game, and they were sicking fans after them. But then also there were people who were harassing one of the authors, and apparently I think it's the author of the Mage game. But don't quote me on that.
You've been quoted.
Crap. Okay. I think it's the author of the Mage game. I think that she's been harassed so much that she like swore that she was never going to do this ever again.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's like this. As I said, the Steam message board for this game is not pretty, and it apparently spilled over to other message boards. I think to the point where one website actually you get banned talking about this game.
Good Lord!
So, I mean, I'm all for more stuff from this title, but. Be warned when talking about this game with other people. Some people took offense to the left leaning stuff in it. I don't know. I didn't think it was that much in the Vampire game as offensive as some people found it to be, but Mage has you volunteering at a refugee shelter, which, you know, with today's climate, he can easily figure out why people would be like,
how dare they reference current events and topical situations
and portray Muslims in a good light. You know, how dare they?
How dare people be treated like people?
Yeah.
So. Motherfuckers. So yeah, for $10, it sounds like, if you're looking for some fun stuff to read, it's worth checking out.
Yeah, definitely.
All right, sounds good. Well, do you have any final words on your review-ish thing, since it was just a lot of text?
No. Pretty much I covered everything I wanted to with World of Darkness. Although, if anybody out there wants to be my sugar daddy or sugar mama and get me an Xbox One, you know who to call.
Yeah, I'm just going to cut you off here. Bye.
Dang it.
All right, and from one guest to another, joining us now is Pernell Vaughn is back. Pernell, how are you doing?
I'm a tit bit nipply. It's about to snow balls out here. How are you?
Ha, tit, the nip, and then balls. You're acting like a real dick, Pernell.
I got up. Oh, one more slipped in the crack.
Wait a second. All the big dick talk was on our last episode.
Big dick
pinball. Anyway, next up to talk about is called Dying Reborn. This is available in two versions on the PlayStation 4, developed by Netcom, published by Oasis Games. It released February 28th on PlayStation 4 for $19.99 or PlayStation VR for $9.99. Dying Reborn VR features an abridged version of the PS4 and Vita version with three chapters, three chapters in a twisted story featuring Matthew, the main character who went out to look for his missing sister, only to find himself waking up in a dilapidated and eerie hotel with seemingly no way out. Now, I covered the VR version. Pernell, you covered the normal version of the game, which is six chapters instead of three. Correct?
Well, I got three, but yes, I did.
So let's start off with yours. Tell us about this game, because I want to hear how it compares to my version.
Well, it starts out with a selection of one of the six chapters. I believe that they were locked, though, so you can scroll and see how many exist, but you can only start with the first one. And you start out waking up in a bed, and you're wondering, you know, how did I get here? What's going on? Who am I? Oh, Shirley, which is the main character's sister, as you mentioned earlier.
Yeah.
And he realizes that he was there trying to find her. So based on his situation and what he can remember, his first instinct is to believe that she's in danger and he must find her. But first, he must solve a series of puzzles to escape from various rooms in order to get to her. But he is being menaced by a man with a fish hat or a fish head. I don't know what it is. He could actually be a walking fish man. I don't even freaking know. But it's in the Harbor Town Motel, so my best guess is that he took a giant bass and like cut it open and put his head in it because he's a really sick dude. So it's resulting in you having to solve a series of puzzles, usually involving making use of the environment to find items that can be used to extract or remove or slash or break other things that will reveal other items that will ultimately result in you finding either a key or some sort of item that can open the next door. Because sometimes it'll be like a key code. Other times it'll be like a series of like what I can only describe as hockey pucks that you can use to insert into a key slot. I actually was enjoying the game. I got through three chapters. Not to say that I didn't play much to get through three chapters, because it lends to probably the one complaint that I have about this game, which isn't exclusive to this game, so it's not really a slight towards it. It's just letting you know what you're getting into.
Yeah.
Which is that the puzzles, again, there are puzzle rooms that you're solving. There's no combat. There's no run button, anything like that. You're just walking. But there are a lot of bizarrely obtuse puzzles in this game. And by that, I mean, well, not obtuse, but just, yeah, I will stick with it. Say, for example, it might be a thing where you go upstairs into a place and it'll say, this is a box and it's taped shut. It looks like there might be something inside. So being a human being with arms and hands, I would just rip the box open because that's what a person would do in that situation. They would just tear the box open. What the hell's in it? Oh, thing. But not in this game. No, you have to actually go and find a kitchen knife to slash the box open. And you can't just get the kitchen knife from the place where it is held, which this isn't so much of a spoiler because it's one part of a larger puzzle. But the kitchen knife is impaled in a dartboard. You would think, hey, grab the knife out of the dartboard. Nope, can't do that, even though you can clearly reach it. What do you have to do? You have to take a dart, throw it at the dartboard to make the dartboard fall down, and then you can take the knife out of the dartboard. So first of all, you have to think
that's just the tropes of like adventure games, though, where you have to do one thing to lead to another, to lead to another, to lead to another.
Oh yeah, I mean, don't get me wrong. That's why I said earlier, like I'm pretty sure a lot of other games have this similar problem. And I get the whole, you know, do one thing to get to another thing to get to another thing. But typically, most of the time, you need to do things with items that you could otherwise not do without the item. Like, oh no, it's raining acid outside. You better get your acid-proof umbrella or you will die walking outside. Okay, I get that. Or coin falls down, great. You can't reach through the grate to get it. Maybe if I get some chewing gum and stick it to a paper clip and expand it, I can pull the coin out of the grate. But in this game, you drop a coin on the floor, which is clearly reachable, but nah, you can't reach it. You need to get an umbrella to reach it. It's like, like, why can't I just grab the coin? Clearly, I have arms. I can reach the fucker. Nope. No. So I get the idea of one thing leads to another, but it's nonsensical things that you have to do where you can just jump a bunch of steps by using the appendages that God gave you. I don't freaking know. But I did enjoy
the
game.
But then you skip a lot of the game elements that way. Yeah.
Or they just create new game elements. I don't know. Make it rain acid so you need an acid-proof umbrella. I don't know. If you need to create, if you need to create things to happen, there's not a lot of, there's not hard to do that. I mean, heck, okay, have a flow of water going through. This part of the hotel is flooded. You can't get by until you turn the water off. There's no shortcutting that. You need the valve. Okay, now do all the crazy stuff to get the valve to shut the water off. Boom, done. Not, can't reach this coin, which is under the table and nothing obstructing it. I got to get an umbrella first to do it.
Do you use I see both of your points on that one, though. It's like, yeah, it doesn't make any sense, but that's, there's a lot of games like that, typical in the adventure genre. And I've been playing a lot of those games lately.
See, you have to show me some of those, because I want to try more of those, because as much fun as I had playing the game, I really enjoy complaining about the nonsense of the puzzles. See,
now you mentioned using an umbrella to get a coin under a table, which leads me to one of the really, really cool things that I noticed between the two games is I didn't do that in my game.
Oh?
Despite the fact that we were in the very same room, you had to use the coin for the box on the door, right?
I believe so. It's hard to remember if it was for a box on the door. I just remember you had to take the coin and...
And you had to put it inside the one thing that was, like, chained to the door so that you
could... Oh, you're right. So that they could open up. You're right. That's what I used it for.
But I didn't get my coin that way. I got it... I'm trying to remember what the hell I did to get the coin. I actually don't even remember. But I saw the umbrella hanging on the wall. I never used the umbrella at all in my version. Despite the fact that...
They probably let you reach to the table.
No, you couldn't do that. No, the coin was just hanging out in, like, one of the drawers, despite the fact that we were playing basically the same story in the same room with the same equipment and same everything else. Many of the puzzles between the two games are completely different, or at least they're different enough that if you played one version and you play the other, you're not going to know exactly what to do. You're going to have different solutions thrown at you. You're going to have different obstacles that you're going to have to take care of. I remember in the one section in the second chapter on mine, I'm going to assume it's the same on yours, where it's after you leave the room.
Record player?
No.
I'm only saying that because that would have stood out very well if it was the same section, because there's a record player that's playing.
Now, in this one, it's after you leave the room, you walk down a hall, and there's a safe that you have to open.
Safe?
Yes, like with an electronic lock on it. It might not be the second chapter. It might be a completely different chapter. It's possible that, like, the three chapters...
Oh, was it underneath underneath a, behind a bar, maybe?
No, it was just inside, or just in a hallway.
They really changed it up then, because I didn't experience a single electronic safe until chapter 3, and it was in a bar.
Well, were there different characters in your game that you had to contend with? Or did you just play the same person the whole time?
I was always Matthew, and I think I saw the fish man once, and there was some dialogue exchange between me and the fish man over intercoms, as those games tend to do. And of course there was the mysterious woman who we don't know who it is, but that's it.
Who just showed up on the TV. Yeah. I'm honestly trying to figure out, because I didn't play the 6-chapter version, so I don't know what chapters aren't in mine.
Good call, actually. Maybe they skipped ahead.
So I'm wondering if things just got, like, shuffled around, or if they switched things up.
Is it possible that they're completely different? Like, aside from, like, the beginning being similar, it actually changes the entire game?
I don't think so, because I did try looking... I'm mentioning this safe that was in the second chapter for me. You know, I saw this hint on a wall that was, like, you know, it had a code, and I tried punching it into the safe. The problem is the safe that I had to enter it in was 5 digits, and the code I saw was only 4. And So I looked up a video of it, which played the standard version, like the 6-chapter version of the game, and it was a completely different safe with a completely different code. The like there's evil, like he's evil coasters or something inside little hockey puck things that I think you mentioned.
Yeah. Oh, you're talking about that wall. Yeah. There was a, that, I think that is the same puzzle thing. Cause it was like, you had to reveal the number. It was a 4-digit number though. You had to reveal the number and then you punch into the safe.
Yeah.
And
mine was 5.
Weird.
Yeah.
Wonder if it was the, without spoiling, because at this point we end up giving all the damn levels away, but I do genuinely yeah. wonder if the you acquired the code the same way that I acquired the code too. Just it was a different different count of numbers. And I'm surprised here they didn't have a record player, because the record player was part of what made the kind of the atmosphere for that part pretty nice. But
I don't remember. I remember I had a mess with a radio, like I had to plug in a radio.
Yeah, I remember that too. That was in my game as well, but this wasn't puzzle related. It was just atmospheric, where it was just as soon as you left the first chapter, there was a record player playing music and you could turn it off if you wanted to. And I left it on because why not? You guys going to serenade me. I'll take up on his offer. No. But pretty much, I mean, it's just a matter of it was there and it was nice that it was there. No. And genuinely, I would say that the game was enjoyable for me, because even though there was a number of points where I was like, this is stupid, why can't I do this, because it's making it more frustrating to not be able to do a thing. But I do like solving puzzles. I do enjoy, you know, having to sit down and, you know, put together, you know, keys, like different scenarios in the room, say go from here to here to here, and I bet this will do that. So I enjoyed that component of the game. And when I eventually started solving these puzzles up through the first 3 chapters, I had fun. It was just, there were definitely a couple of times where when I found the solutions, this is stupid. Why would they not let me, you know, God, Jesus, you know? And of course, oh, something I definitely have to make a mention of though, because this is what I do when I review games. I can't help it. 2 things I thought were funny. One, there were some hilarious typos in the game. Like there was one where it was like a newspaper clipping and it was talking about a murder. Person was killed, but the typo said that the person was skilled. So reading it with just that one letter being off made for quite the different newspaper article.
Very possible. So, they were just very talented.
Exactly. It was just, I laughed pretty hard when I saw that. And it was another thing that I came across where I was in one of the chapters. It was the bar I was in. And I'm sure you're familiar with all these kind of games where you click on things, the main character like makes a description about it. Like, oh, this is really dusty. It's like no one's been here for a long time, you know. Yeah. It's always something like that, right? So in this chapter, a bunch of dusty tables and the like. So if you click on the tables, like, this table's been is dusty. It's like no one's been here for a while. Or a lot of glasses stacked up. Clearly, these guys were having a party when they were here. So, yeah, it was a dirty place. But at one point, you see a hot cup of coffee. And I mean hot. It's steaming. There's steam coming out of the cup. He has nothing to say about it. By far the oddest thing in the room filled with weird puzzles is the hot cup of coffee that he has nothing to say about.
Looks like nobody's had anything in here in a while. Oh, wait. Somebody was here just 5 minutes ago.
Exactly. He's in the bathroom right now. He just left the coffee to go take a leak. I laughed so hard. I was like, why is that even there? Why won't you talk about it, Matthew? What is wrong with you?
I will say that the atmosphere did seem to have kind of like a B-movie style to it. I don't know if that was intentional or if it's just lost in translation, possibly, because I believe it's an Asian company that made the game.
Maybe they just have a belief that hot tea never goes cold.
Like, I'll say that could possibly attribute to the typo as well.
A translation, yeah.
A quick translation. He probably just got a guy to say, look, we want to release our indie game in America. Can you just throw some words together?
Can you just throw some words together? They don't matter. Just make sure that they're there.
Eustace R. D-Wo. As long as you can play it, I don't care.
Yeah, but Netcom in Wuhan. I believe it's China. I believe it's a Chinese company.
Okay. Like, and also, of course, the voices were funny because... But these kind of games, I obviously prefer them to not take themselves seriously. I like when the voices are hilarious.
Yeah, I gotta say, sure. voice acting in this game, I was chuckling quite a bit at some of the lines.
It was straight out of House of the Dead quality. Like, I have to find Shirley.
Those are brutal to play through sometimes. It's just like,
although I'm not sure how it came across on the full version of the game. I will say the VR version, I thought it was really, really good looking game. Like, that's visually, graphics were fantastic on VR.
I thought it was a graphically nice game. Like, I didn't look at it and go, look at the chipping, or, oh man, clearly it's like he's got a third leg there. It's just falling apart. But I thought it looked really nice. I was fine with the atmosphere. But I do have to ask, though, since you played the VR version, what was, like, how did it play? What were some of the actions they had you do?
A lot of it was, like, it was still all controller-based. So it wasn't there were a lot of motion-sensing things. It was still, like, the VR aspect came with, like, I know in the first room there was a piano that you had to play, or, like, a little keyboard that you had to play. You still used, like, the D-pad to select the keys, but the clue to it was a bunch of numbers that were, like, super stretched out, and normally you wouldn't be able to read it, but, like, if you lowered your head down far enough and kind of looked up at it at an angle, the numbers, like, scrunched together so you could see what you had to play on the keys.
So that's pretty cool, because we had on the home version had a similar, how was that, the home version? Now, the console version had a similar approach, but you couldn't really do the head look thing, so you just kind of had to glint and see it. But if you were able to do that with the headset and actually make it more visible to you, that actually is pretty nice.
Yeah, but for the most part, like, most of the puzzles were still just, you know, walk around, use the buttons. The movement was kind of slow because it is VR, so they don't want you, like, going moving around too quick. The turning was done with, like, hit left or right and you snap like 45 degrees or something like that, but it was free movement where you can just walk forward instead of, like, teleport here, teleport there, teleport there.
Well, but just to make sure, when you say walk, you do mean press the stick forward. You're not, like, taking steps or anything, right?
Yeah, you just hold forward on the analog stick.
Oh, okay. Because I still have yet to get an opportunity to try the PSVR.
It's a shame that they didn't utilize PS Move controllers, even though, you know, those aren't great. But still, it would have been cool to be able to, like, actually pick up stuff and actually, like, try to solve the puzzles.
The thing is, I think that would have required rebuilding the game from scratch instead of making a more specialized version of an already existing game.
Yeah, that's true.
So
if they make a new product in the future, they would be able to do something like that.
Possibly. So I can appreciate the fact that they didn't just port the game over. They went out of their way to remix the game in certain ways. Yeah, it's only half of the full game, but it's also half the price.
That is true.
That's better. Yeah. Okay.
Because the
that would suck if it was the same price.
Yeah, the 6-chapter version of the game is $20. The 3-chapter VR version is $10. I'm not sure how you feel with the full version being $20, but I'll say now, a VR, like, even though it's only, like, maybe 2-3 hours tops, for $10, I think it's worth a buy it on PlayStation VR for $10.
I just went to see Get Out a couple days ago, and it cost me $16. The movie was great, but it was only 2 hours long. So if you're a fan of escape room puzzles, and you're not necessarily averse to how cheesy the story may or may not end up being, I think if you can get 4 hours out of this game, it's easily worth $20. So I would actually go with a buy on this.
Sounds good. Yeah,
I didn't play it.
I wasn't sure how it would hold up in the full 6-chapter version, and if the value would still be there. Because I know a lot of the value with the VR comes down to the fact that there's the VR tax that we talk about. Like, things are going to be more expensive on VR because it's VR.
Yeah, but you know, it's like, some people would say that, but there's other people who don't go into more specifics. They just look at price as a flat thing, and they'll go, $9.99 for how many chapters? Just get another win. So, but, like, if you just look at, you know, technology aside, you're just looking at, here's a game that I want to play. It's not a great deal of escape the room type puzzlers on consoles these days. So this kind of fills a niche there too. And that's why I feel like if you feel like that's something that you miss or you like to do and you want a game that allows you the opportunity to do that and they slap a little bit of a story around it, if you can get a small amount of enjoyment out of it, it'll be worth your time. Now, obviously, if you're a budget gamer and you're like, crap, this $20 has to stretch, then yeah, you probably shouldn't be buying this game.
But I was going to say, like, this game seems for people that that have a little bit of extra cash, not the kind of person that, like, $20 and that's, like, their gaming budget for the month kind of thing.
Exactly. Yeah, if you buy this game and it's all you got for a month, I pity you.
Yeah. But, and then I guess when it comes down to if you've got to pick between the two, do you want something to test out the VR or do you want a full, more fleshed out story? Because I'm just going to assume that the 3-chapter version clearly leaves out some chunks of story.
Yeah, it
feels like that. Because they even say it's an abridged version of the game.
Well, I'm also going to say that I agree with you there, but I feel like if you ended up buying the VR, it's possible that you're probably going, I mean, I don't know how many, I mean, there's a couple games out there, but I don't know the diversity of them or anything like that, but I would almost wager that you'll be looking for opportunities to do different things or work with the VR in different ways. So no. I could almost see a person buying them both, like the flat out say, like we're talking about right now. I got the console version, but for $10, I can see how it works on VR, compare the two experiences. So they may be inclined to just do both, but because, and then while we were talking about earlier, for, you know, if you're a budget gamer, nah. But if you're already owning a PlayStation VR at this stage in the game, you're probably not a budget gamer.
No, that's very true.
Very true. Very true.
So I feel like they're likely to buy it just for the sake of saying, I want to see how this looks on VR.
I would like to see them release some kind of bundle that includes the two of them together.
Oh, that's a good call.
I think that would be neat if it was like $25 and you got the two of them.
That'd be a smart play on their part, I think.
We could always see that come in the future, but I got to say it's pretty cool that because just playing the 3-chapter version, I kind of want to buy the full version to get the full experience of the game. And I could see it working the other way where if you play the full version, you have that curiosity of like, how does this change in VR?
No, I think I'd be more inclined to play it in the normal version first just to get the full experience and then play the abridged after.
Ditto. But you know what would make it even better? If by buying the bundle that they release later, they introduce a side chapter where you come across a wandering minstrel who wants you to go into a dungeon to find his flute.
Oh, God damn it.
I didn't see that coming.
Oh, man, yeah. It would be the best bonus chapter they ever did.
Oh, Pernell.
Dying Reborn Minstrel chapter. It'd be the boss.
Look at you with your throwback reference.
I know what I'm
doing. Most people won't get it. It's the best part.
Oh, man.
They're in.
So on that note, do you have any final thoughts on the game that you want to toss out there before we wrap up?
I would just say, you know, that I think it's a good effort by these guys to put this game out there. It was an enjoyable play. If you do decide to buy this game, go in knowing that a small team made this game and they did a decent job with what they were working with, and it is an enjoyable experience. But just be prepared to chuckle at some of it too, because it's a dude with a freaking fish head. You can't take that seriously. You just can't.
True.
Very he probably true. Smells like a fish too. That's just nasty.
Or is it?
That's true. Matthew might be into that kind of thing. Shirley too.
All right. Well, Pernell, thank you for your service, and you have yourself a wonderful night in the blizzard conditions that are about to happen.
Yay, snowpocalypse. Thank you, good sir. Wish you guys the same.
All right, final game to talk about before we jump into our Vector Unit interview is called Verdun or Verdun.
It's one of the other.
One of flip a coin. Developed by M2H Game Studio, published by Blackmail Games. It finally released March 8th on Xbox One for $19.99. It released last summer, I think, for PS4 and Steam.
April 28th, 2015, according to Steam.
Okay, well, PS4 it released last August, I think, September, something like that. Steam, it's been out a while, but PS4, it hit PS4 last year. It's finally out now on Xbox One. Verdun is the first multiplayer first-person shooter set in a realistic World War I setting. The merciless trench warfare offers a unique battlefield experience, immersing you and your squad into intense battles of attack and defense. CJ, what'd you think of this one?
Well, when they say that this is the multiplayer FPS set in a realistic World War I setting, they are not lying. This game is super realistic to the point that it's... It can be a little bit overwhelming and a bit boring if you're not into the realistic and slow-paced action that was in the World War I. I think that the game offered a lot of fun and a lot of different game modes. Like, there's a Frontlines game mode, which is the attacking and defending mode, where you push up with your team and you try to take their base. And then when you take it, you have to defend it from them taking it back. And if you defend it successfully, you win. And the whole point is they push back and forth battle, which is kind of fun and has a lot of moments where there's going to be people flanking you. And you got to pay attention from every direction while you're in this trenches. And you can't really see what's coming up next. And then there's the commanding officers, which can throw like gas and stuff. And the gas, you have to put the gas masks on when there's gas, and damn, the gas mask makes it impossible to see. I don't know why they went with this, because I honestly feel like if I put a gas mask on in real life, I could probably see much more than what the game constricts you to viewing. It feels like there's too much. You can see like the entire gas mask while on your face. It's weird. And there's even like stuff on the eyes, like eye window, I guess. The glass that you can see through, and there's like little bits on it that you can't see through because it's metal, and it's like, man, I can't see shit. Weird. and it's all foggy because all the gas. So it's like every time the gas got put down, I was just like, why did the team do it? Like, you're just making it worse. That being said, I wasn't very good at it because I wanted to play it too quickly. I was thinking it was going to be a lot more like what people compared it to from what I'd heard, and that of like Battlefield 1. And it is not Battlefield 1 at all. Don't get that wrong. This is not that kind of game. The only similarity is that it is a World War I game. Everything else is different. This game is super realistic. While Battlefield still offers that arcade mode that's kind of... Or not mode, but like that arcade feeling that makes it more like playable and easier to get into. Yeah. This is a game that's going to be for hardcore fans, people that loved the realism, and people that just want a rough around the edges but really solid game. The graphics are amazing. Like, this game looks beautiful. Everything is really gritty and just looks awful, but in the good way of like, yeah, that's what it would probably look like back then. The weapon system and menus are weird. I'm not sure what any of it really had to do. Like, the way you unlock weapons is by going into your loadout, and then you gotta like unlock them alone. Like, you don't start with a weapon that's actually useful. You have to unlock them, but you have the money to unlock them right away. So it doesn't really make sense why you couldn't just start with a real gun. Instead, you start with a pistol, and you have to figure out how to unlock a real gun. Even though you have the points to already do it as soon as you start the game. And then for a little while, I was just running around with a Luger, and I'm just like, what the hell am I doing? like, I want a real gun. And then I figured out how to unlock, like, a car. And I was just like, and not a car like you get in it, but, you know, the car rifle.
Now, I want to imagine that you're just driving around in a car.
Yes, I'm running them over in the Ford Model T. Wow, that was a really good sound effect. What the fuck? You're really good at horns. That was insane. And but once I unlocked the car, things got a little better for me. I figured it out a little bit more. The Frontlines mode was fun, probably the best mode of the three. Then there's the rifle deathmatch mode, which at least this time it lets you start out by picking your loadout and unlocking weapons. So this time you don't have to try to figure out what the hell you're supposed to unlock. And in this mode, it's a little more slow. This game, I legitimately played like a 1 10-minute game of it. And in that period, I think I saw four people.
Oh, wow.
it is super slow, and the battlefield is huge. So you're just, and I was just firing shots trying to get kills, and it's just like, I missed. They're so far away. Like, what am I? I have an iron sight. I don't even have a scope. And I tried to unlock the scope, but then you can't put the scope on your gun until after you've respawned. And I didn't die because I couldn't find anybody. So I went around like a 10-minute match where a scope would have been preferred, and I didn't have one. And so I picked off a couple of kills on that match, but it was like, it was rare because I just couldn't find anybody, and nobody else could find anybody because everybody was camping. I think the top guy had like 9 kills in a 10-minute match.
Oh wow!
Which averages out to less than a kill a minute. So damn.
No, it seems like this is a lot more of a slow and methodic war game instead of pew 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 kill everybody.
Yes, this game's definitely the slow pace. If you're a fan of Rainbow Six Siege and you've wanted to try like a World War One game, this probably will be a little more appealing than Battlefield or any other alternatives to like a old school shooter.
Yeah,
because
it also sounds like a more realistic shooter as well. Because I'm going to guess, like, if you get shot, you're dead.
Yes, this game is that. Well, that's part of the reason that makes it feel so slow and like everybody's being super slow and camping is because, one, you only get like a tiny bit of health. You get shot once with a rifle, you're dead.
And so two, it's like real life where if you get shot, yeah, exactly, you're probably gonna die.
Exactly. And two, there's a long respawn timer. Like it's like 15 seconds. So if you die, it's like, so everybody just like camps in corners and like, this is more fun than dying and waiting 15 seconds. I'll just do this. Even though now you're waiting 2 minutes in the same spot, not doing anything.
It's meant to be, you know, you want to think about what you're doing instead of just run out. That's how war is. You don't want to just run out and shoot everyone because you're going to die right away. You don't want to die.
Well, that's what I'm saying. This game is definitely more for the people who want a realistic game. And for that, I'd have to say, for anybody that wants that, this is a perfect game to pick up. If you want that kind of shooter that's slow, methodical, and is realistic, then this is the absolute perfect game for you. You're going to want to buy this.
Nice.
If you're not really into that, I would recommend giving it a try. See what you think. It could be for you. It could just be meh.
Sounds good. I do have to ask you, because you always have to bring these up, but I hear the achievements are not too achievement whore friendly.
Oh, no, they're not. Seriously is in this, basically. There's 10,000 kills in online. there's
and
a
in
lot
your
of
match, there were 9. Oh, my God.
Yeah, no, this game is going to take longer than Seriously because of the fact that it's so slow-paced.
Oh, my Lord.
This game is brutal. I didn't even get a single achievement because there are no give-me achievements. Like, this game, every single achievement, you got to at least do some work for.
Holy
like,
shit.
The easiest achievement in the game is, like, getting 10 kills in a single match as a commanding officer. Like, I was never even the commanding officer, and I never got 10 kills in a single match.
I kind of like that. They make you fucking earn that shit.
Yeah, it's a brutal one. I'm estimating it. And then there's an achievement for getting 5,000 headshots. So I imagine, which is going to probably take longer than the 10,000 kills, because there's no way you're going to get 50% of your kills as headshots. I might have gotten a couple headshots throughout the couple hours I put in earlier. And then a couple hours I put in yesterday. And it's just like, I don't think I got any headshots. Maybe 2 or 3. I mainly shot people in the gut because it was easy. I don't even know if there was aim assist. It didn't feel like there was.
I could totally see there not being aim assist because they're like, listen, this is not a game for casuals.
No,
at all.
It is not. It's a brutal game. But I mean, if you like those kind of games, this is definitely the one to pick up.
Hey, it sounds like there's a definite audience for this game out there, and if that person is you, you're going to really enjoy it.
Yeah, I was pleasantly surprised by the amount of players in the game too. Like, it did, there was no problem trying to find a game.
That's good to hear.
It was instant, and I think there's like 800 and some people tracked on just TA alone, which is nice. Just a small community of Xbox gamers in general. So I think there's quite a few people playing this game.
Nice.
You're not going to have a hard time finding.
Sounds good. So, yeah, if you're looking for a super realistic, in-depth shooter, here you go. if you're looking for a new Call of Duty, get the fuck away.
Well, I'm not saying you have to be that arcade friendly, but it's definitely a game that's like, if you're looking for something that you're going to get 100 kills within an hour or so. Yeah.
If you're a dude bro just looking to bro it up with some Call of Dude bro, this is not the bro to bro.
Bro. Are you serious, bro?
Is that accurate?
I guess.
Bro.
Not really, but yes. Hey, that is true.
Hey, bro.
I guess you could bro this game up, though, if you were really into it. Like, there's no wrong turn with broing.
Yeah, bro. Yo. Anyway, that's it for our reviews. So stick around. We're going to have an awesome chat with Matt Small of Vector Unit. I love having him on. He's so fun to chat with.
Yeah, I enjoyed that one. And got to remember to make them cookies, which you're going to get the reference later.
People. And then if anybody's listening, we make mention of an emblem later on in the show. If anyone's interested in that, shoot us an email, thesmlpodcast@gmail.com, and we might be able to hook you up.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
And then,
exclusive emblem.
I know a lot of people like when we mention deals and stuff like that, usually because we release on Fridays or later in the week. We don't always have a great window of opportunity to talk about sales, but there's some really, really good sales going on Xbox right now.
Yeah, there is. I'm so mad that I won't have my paycheck for a little while because I want some of the games, and it's just like, it hurts me.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff that we've covered on this show as well. Kingdom New Lands, Manuel Samuel, The Final Station.
Fuck, I didn't even see Manuel Samuel. I want that game. God, down to
$5.
Oh my god, dude. And apparently there's a shit ton of other ones as well that are on a huge sale. It's like,
yeah.
It's why?
Week two of their indies thing going on. Level 22, Her Majesty Spiffing, The Living Dungeon, iZombie, Night Squad. God, there's so many. Party Hard, Reagan Gorbachev, Slain, Xenoraid, Westerado.
There's some good ones to pick up in there. I Am Bread. There's a lot of good ones to pick up in there.
Yeah, The Assembly, that's a newer one. Knee Deep. Shantae.
I didn't know that The Assembly was on sale. I need money, man. I wish
that... Skyling? Wow, Skyling. That's only a $5 game, and it's down to $3.
Wow. That's awesome. That's pretty good.
Oh, here we go. For the people who are pissed off at the Humble Freedom Bundle, Subnautica. Oh, that was last week, so that's probably going to be... That's probably going to be over by the time you hear.
Yeah, well, I mean, it'll definitely be over because it's ending tonight.
Oops, never mind.
Unless you upload it within the next 3 hours, it's over. Yeah,
that's not happening. I went too far back. Axiom Verge, I like that one. Yeah, a lot of cool stuff on sale, so I'm probably going to be a lot poorer.
I wish I could be, but I'm already too poor.
Yeah, you are. Assassin's Creed Rogue is down to $12. Holy
yeah,
shit.
I know. I want to pick. I'm going to need like $300 just to buy all this.
Ollie Ollie 2 is
$375. Mm, wow. That's good.
That's a $15 game and it's under $4. Good lord.
Yeah, that's fucking awesome.
Yeah. You guys need to jump on the Xbox sale going on this week.
Yeah. Do that now.
Well, no. Right now, you're going to stick around for Matt Small of Vector Unit.
Well, who says you can't listen to a podcast while buying games and downloading them?
That's tough, doing two things at once.
That's how I always listened to the podcast back when I used to listen to the podcast.
Wow.
I'd impressive. Always play a game.
Good stuff. So, yeah, any final words before we jump to the Vector Unit?
Please send me some cookies, too.
All right, welcome back, everyone. Wonderful interview with us at this time. A smidge late, but this is his third time, so we could let that slide. But Matt Small of Vector Unit, welcome back to the show.
Hey, thanks, guys.
How are you doing today?
I'm doing pretty well, I have to say. A little scrambled, as you can tell, but yeah, pretty well.
You said you're on a deadline. What kind of deadline are you on right now? What's going on? Something secret? Well, something new?
It is actually kind of secret and new. Like, we're, we finished Riptide.
Yeah.
And we finally got Riptide out onto Xbox and Windows last week.
Thank you, by the way, for finally getting that out.
Yes. Yeah, that's a whole nother story. Yeah. But in the last 6 months, we've been pretty much like working on getting Riptide through certification for the new Xbox Play Anywhere service. And which is the thing where if you buy a game on it's Xbox Live enabled, and if you buy a game on Windows 10, then you get it on Xbox One and vice versa.
Which is such an awesome program, by the way.
It's cool. I think it's totally the right way to go.
Yeah. Don't gotta pay twice for the same game.
Yeah, exactly. And you also, you get sort of guaranteed like parity between Windows and Xbox games, and you get the compatibility of being able to jump back and forth and move your save game and share achievements and all that stuff.
Is Riptide a cross-play game? Because I know some of the Play Anywhere games are cross-play as well with online.
Yeah, it is.
That is so awesome.
Yeah, so you can play... it's Xbox Live enabled for, both platforms, and you can play across Windows 10 and Xbox One.
That is so cool.
Yeah.
It's the future.
Yeah, it is. It is. It's the future. And we're trying, we're talking to Microsoft and to play, Sony and Valve and everybody else about seeing if, because it would be possible technologically from our point of view to get everybody playing together, like PlayStation, Xbox, Steam.
Yeah.
Even mobile.
I know the Rocket League guys have been like, we have it all figured out on our end. All we got to do is flip a switch. We could have it running in a day. We just need everyone's approval. And the people dragging their feet are Sony, because they have no reason to allow it. They're the number one console right now. So what do they have to gain from it? Which I think is bullshit. Like, think of the players. Like,
let us think of the kids.
Think of the children. Let the children play together.
Yeah. I mean, for us, it's actually, in our case, the people that we've been talking to, like, most of the resistance has come from Sony not wanting to play with Microsoft and Microsoft not wanting to play with Sony. Like, they both seem like they're okay playing with Steam.
Yeah.
I think it's just because it's been done enough.
Yeah, maybe that's it. Like, it's already that's already been cracked open or something. And so, like, Sony seems like they're cool with us, doing cross-play with Steam, and I think that Microsoft is too. Although I'm not sure how that would figure in with the whole XPA thing. But
yeah, it's just that last bridge between Microsoft and Sony.
Yeah,
I wish they would figure their shit out. To my knowledge, there's only one game ever that has allowed Xbox and PlayStation to play together, and that was Final Fantasy XI.
Hmm. Yeah, and I guess they can get away with it because they're, Final Fantasy.
And that was so early that, it was PlayStation 2 and Xbox 360.
Right.
Yeah. Well, so, I imagine that a good way to go about that would be a game that's like an MMO and you actually have to sign into its own servers to play it. Because then at that point, they manage the servers and everybody could just be on the same server.
Yeah. Yeah, well, in our case, I mean, that's the thing that allows it is that, like, we're using something called Photon for our multiplayer. So it's like our own multiplayer. It's running on separate servers and stuff. And so we can, we can let people play together if we want. And we've tested, we've actually tested doing Steam, PlayStation, and the mobile, like the mobile players too, all at the same time. And
it's trippy. Worked.
Yeah, but we haven't actually released. We haven't released that as an update, but it's one of the things that we're thinking about doing.
That'd be pretty cool. If for the very least, it'd be cool to be able to at least play with the people that are allowing it, like have Steam and Xbox and Steam and PlayStation and mobile and whatever.
Yeah.
At least open up those bridges and then see if later Sony and Microsoft come to an agreement.
Yeah, exactly. So that's kind of where we're at right now with like with the multiplayer stuff, is that we have like some sort of requests that are processing, and we'll see like if if those come back and they're cool with it, then we'll probably do another update for like PlayStation, Steam, and mobile potentially that allow them to play together in some configuration. But yeah. But yeah, so I mean, it's so we've been working on getting the Xbox version, the Windows version, through certification, and while we were working on that, we decided to take a break from doing games that you know, that we've been going kind of back and forth between doing Beach Buggy and Riptide games for the last few years, and so yeah. We wanted to try something a little bit different, and so we've been working on a new mobile game, which is kind of like a cartoony kind of driving platformy game, and it's actually we haven't officially announced it yet, but I think we're probably going to announce it really soon, like maybe this week or next week, because
if you're going to announce it by Friday, you could just say it here because this show won't go live until Friday.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, okay, so yeah, that way I'll have to sort of force Deb's hand that way. And, you know what? Let's just do this.
Get on it, Deb. Let's do this.
Exactly. The cat's out of the bag. We got to get our announcement out before Friday.
Or else seven people are going to hear it and it won't be official.
Exactly. It's going to blow up. So, okay, yeah. So what the heck, I'll tell you. It's a game called Mousebot. And the idea is that you're like a robotic mouse running through these sort of mazes of obstacle courses that have like, you know, more and more nefarious traps, like giant cheese grater grinders and, you know, stomper, like metallic sort of stompers and pendulums and all that kind of stuff. And there are these like scientist cats that are kind of putting you through the ringer, and you have to like basically run through all these different platformy kind of levels to like, you know, make it to the end of the evil cat lab maze. And as you play through the game, like each time you get to a new, each time you get to, you sort of unlock a new chapter, it like introduces a new trap type. And so like the levels get progressively harder and harder as you go forward. And there's also, there's an element of every time you die, you like, your mouse bot gets kind of disintegrated or destroyed into like smashed into little parts. And then the next time you play the level, you can see the parts from where you died.
I love games that do that, that just have like a corpse or body parts left over from where you were.
Just like, yes. Meat Boy, blood, yes. Still on the level.
Exactly. It's not blood, it's meat juice. Get it right.
Well, yeah. Well, it's blood. Yes, it's blood from animals, please.
It's gravy.
Yeah, exactly.
So you'll just have robot gravy everywhere.
It'll be robot gravy, yeah. Sweet. We kind of debated about how much, like whether we wanted to sort of have it be just sort of dry mechanical parts or whether there should be splatters of oil. And we went with the dry mechanical parts because we thought the oil was a little too graphic for the children.
For the children. Got to think of the children.
Yeah.
It would be funny, but yes. The children. What, that does make sense.
What platforms are you looking at with this? iOS and Android?
Yeah, initially it's going to be iOS and Android. And then and we'll see how it does. If it kind of takes off. It's actually, I mean, the thing about it is, like, we come from a console background and PC background. And even now when we develop for mobile, a lot of the times we do a lot of our initial play testing on PC with like a controller or something. And we support controllers on like mobile and Apple TV and stuff like that. But because of all of that, we have a tendency to make our games kind of hard. And so right now we're doing some initial testing and realizing like, oh my God, we made this game super hard. And so we're trying to sort of find the right balance of like, you know, making some of the early levels a little bit easier so people can get a little bit more into it before they, like, you know, start hitting the real challenge.
Before they start losing their friggin' mind.
Exactly. So yeah.
Yeah, so that's a challenge with right the, those games.
Yeah, it's hard.
With the controller, but a lot are going to use the control on the screen.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, a lot of games, I mean, at least for me, you know, I think for people that are used to using a controller, like, a lot of games are just a lot easier to play. I mean, I think, like, even like the old tech games are a lot easier to play with a controller than they are.
I'm sure they are.
On mobile.
I think any pretty much, unless it's like a game that's so simplistic that tapping it's actually easier than moving the cursor around. But
yeah,
generally those games aren't released on big platforms anyway.
No. Now, yeah. I'm new to the whole, like, I just finally got an iPhone. I figured Verizon kind of gave up on the Windows phone, so I made the jump back to iPhone. What kind of controllers can some idiot like me, who doesn't know what kind of controllers work on an iPhone, what would work for me?
Well, there's, like, let's see, did you get, what kind of iPhone did you get?
7 Plus, because nice. Because I don't know what moderation is.
Yeah, the
yep.
Got to go big right away, huh?
You do.
256 like gig, because, again, I don't know what moderation is.
Right, exactly. You're going to need all of that for all of the double HD, for the 4K movies. I guess it doesn't do 4K, right? That would be silly.
Yeah. I have no idea. I have, like,
that would be ridiculous.
I think I have something like 20 fucking Disney movies downloaded, because I have it tied to my Disney account, so I have, like, Marvel and...
Oh, nice.
I have a problem.
Oh, well, it's not a problem that can't be fixed by watching a movie on your huge screen.
That's very true.
Yeah, it's like a little TV. You hold that, like, you know, 12 inches from your face, it's like a big screen TV.
Very true.
And then you
Aladdin, Avengers, Captain America, The Good Dinosaur, Hercules, Nightmare Before Christmas...
Oh, that's a classic.
Zootopia. I just got Moana today, so I'm going to have to download that.
Yeah, that's cool. I haven't seen that yet. I'm actually kind of excited to see that.
Me too.
I don't know anything about movies that are coming out right now.
I'm a Disney kid. I can't help it. I'm a Disney kid.
They're classics.
So yeah, racing.
Yep.
Yeah. So I was going to say, with the controller, the... like the older iPhones had like this funny little kind of like gamepad thing that you could snap the phone into. It had a hole in the middle of it that was phone shaped and you could snap your phone into the phone hole. But the new ones, I don't think they make something like that for the 7 because it's so big, but they do have like sort of like Bluetooth style controllers. The code that you look for is MFI. MFI means like made for iPhone or something.
Mm.
And so if it's an MFI controller, it should work with like the iPhone. And I think they definitely have sort of like gamepad style controllers.
I'll have to look into it because my fat thumbs do not work well with some of these games.
Yeah.
Fingers.
And there's like a decent number of, I think like a lot of the big, especially like a lot of the big racing games and stuff like that have controller support built in.
MFA Android?
What's that?
Would Androids be MFA?
they should be, right? But no, that's confusingly. Actually, the Androids ones just kind of work generally with like any Bluetooth controller, I think.
Oh, that's interesting that Androids is more simple.
It's like more open, you know? But you also, it's a little bit more of a grab bag. Like, there's some controllers that have, like, weird sort of non-standard button mappings, and then you have to maybe download some extra app to deal with, like, remapping the buttons. But,
yeah, screw that. Just buy a simple controller, like one that's modeled right after the Xbox controller.
Yeah. So you can actually use, yeah, like an Xbox controller will totally work on Android.
Oh, that's interesting, isn't it,
Joe? I like to think that, like, iTunes is kind of on par with, Steam, and that there's tons of stuff there. There's a lot of good, a lot of bad, but you know, everything's there and it's going to work. And then Android is kind of like Kazaa, where there's just a ton of shit and it's all filled with viruses and it's all going to explode.
That's why you don't download anything gross. You figure out what's good and what's not. Don't download anything with less than 1,000 downloads.
Yeah.
You're going to be putting a virus in.
It's like buyer beware.
Yeah. Buy from popular companies that you know are good.
Yeah. Like Vector Unit.
Exactly.
So, by the way, I do have to pick up an iTunes card because I'm going to grab like all of your games.
Awesome.
Riptide, GP2, Renegade, Shine Runner. I don't know what Shine. What is Shine Runner?
Shine Runner is Shine Runner is a game that is only on mobile. Actually, maybe we did do a Windows version of it, but it's like a swamp boat game. It's sort of like, do you remember the game Dope Wars from like way back in the day? It was like an early phone game. And I think maybe there's a web version of it, but it's basically like a smuggling game where it's set in the Shine Runner is set in the bayou and you're driving around on flat bottom, like fan boats going from location to location. And each time you go to a new location, you pick up, you know, there's like, you can trade things like moonshine and tobacco and crawdads and other
tabacky
stuff. Like tabacky.
Tabacky.
And shine. And then you go, you know, you go from place to place and the prices go higher and lower and you try to like, you know, buy low and sell high and make your money in the swamp.
It's an interesting game.
Well, for 99 cents, I just bought that because I feel like that's something that needs to be played. Something I need in my life.
Thank you. I'll tell you, like, Shine Runner is one of my favorite games that we've made because it was like the second mobile game that we made and we did it really fast. Like me, it was during a time at Vector Unit when it was just me and Ralph. So there was just the two of us and we had like 4 months, and it was kind of a turning point because we were thinking like, oh, we could put together a bunch of new game pitches and go around and like pitch these game ideas to publishers and see if we can get a publisher to give us money, or we could take that time and just see if we can like crush out a game in like 4 months and just like publish it and see what happens. And so that's kind of what Shine Runner came from, and it was really fun. Like, it was a really intense, super creative, super fast like turnaround, and the game totally, like, you know, it did okay. Like, it made its money back and everything, and so that kind of made us realize that we didn't have to go around and like, you know, beg for money from publishers necessarily. Like, we potentially could just keep making our own games.
So this leads to the inevitable question of when is Shine Runner HD coming?
Shine Runner HD for the Shine Runner 4K.
Yes.
Yes, for the Scorpio.
Scorpio and PS4 right. Pro.
Shine Runner is one of those games that we always fantasize about making like a sequel to or an update to. Maybe we will port it over. It's getting easier and easier to port to to bring games over to like the consoles now. So it might make sense for us to just do it and see what happens.
That's confirmation right here. It has been confirmed. Vector Unit, in sometime by 2025, we'll have Shine Runner available on Xbox.
But it'll release 2026 for Xbox One.
Yeah.
<That's> Windows right. 10 to play anywhere.
Exactly.
What was with the massive delay? I know when we had you on, I think back in August, you were saying that you were hoping by like the end of September that the Xbox version would be out.
I remember listening to that because I was super excited for the game back when I was just a listener.
I know. Well, I appreciate the fact that you guys didn't completely forget about it. So let's see. So what happened? So first of all, the first thing that happened was, like I said, we started using Photon instead of like the native Xbox like networking. And the reason we did that, there were a couple things about Photon that we liked better, and plus we were using it on all of our other, you know, like on the PlayStation version and the mobile version. And so we thought like, oh, we can just get it approved. Like, we can basically get Photon like through Microsoft approval, and there was some extra sort of hoops that we had to jump through in order to get it approved, like through their security review. So anyway, so we were kind of going through that process, and that was where the initial delay came from. And then hold on, let me turn this off. And then towards the end of that process, right around the time that I think I talked to you, Microsoft is all, oh, hey, you know, this whole Xbox Play Anywhere thing, like, we're opening that up so that people other than just Microsoft games can, like, be on that. And so you could put your game out and it would be single purchase and it would be, you know, cross play and all this other stuff. And we were like, that's great. That's totally worth, like, holding the game for another, you know, month and a half or whatever to, like, get in on that. And then basically that ended up being just taking a lot longer. The whole XBA, because it was a brand new thing for Microsoft. Like, they're just starting to kind of, like, bring other games in. And the process for getting all the games, like, you know, getting all the assets uploaded and getting the Windows and the Xbox stuff sort of, like, all synced up and all that kind of stuff was sort of manual, unlike the earlier, like, automated process. And so there was just, like, a lot of growing pains. It just kind of kept going back and forth. And the next thing we knew, it was January.
But it's out, and it's still amazing.
It's yes,
I'm glad you didn't forget about Xbox.
No, yeah, I mean, that's the thing. Like, I wrote, like, a blog piece about it, and I totally meant it. Like, Xbox was our first platform at Vector Unit, you know, the Xbox 360. And
was that Hydro Thunder Hurricanes?
Uh-huh, yeah, exactly, Hydro Thunder Hurricane. And so... So it was, you know, it was a big deal for us to, like, you know, Xboxes, and also Beach Buggy Racing did really well on the Xbox for us. And so, I mean, Xbox is always one of those platforms that we, you know, that we like developing for. It's just, in this particular case, it was kind of a little bit being in the right place, but at the wrong time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, it happens, but it's out now. I think every single person I have talked to about the game has agreed that it is amazing.
Awesome.
I know CJ was saying that he couldn't find anything to complain about.
Yeah, I just shit rainbows all over the game because I'm so happy.
That's great. Yeah, I'm pretty happy with it. I mean, the one good thing is that, like, because we, you know, we kept sort of noodling with the game, like, we had a chance to, like, tune it a little bit and, like, take some of the improvements that we've, you know, that we've been working on. And, like, so the Xbox has, like, the Xbox version has all the kind of latest and greatest improvements, which is mostly, like, things like just sort of, like, tuning the difficulty levels, like, making the multiplayer matchmaking a little bit easier, that kind of stuff.
Any kind of hidden bonuses in there for Xbox gamers?
There's not, I mean, other than, like, the sort of XPA features, like the crossplay and stuff like that, there's no extra features. I guess you guys know, you know about Big Head Mode, right?
Yes.
Yeah,
you revealed that on the last time you were on.
That's
right. Which was awesome. And then after we went off the air, like, you and I were just talking afterwards, I remember you gave me some kind of code to put in for a special emblem that I wish I could remember what the hell it was, because I that'd be so cool to have.
Yeah, that's right. There's, like, a special so there's, like, some you know, you can customize your jet ski with different decals, and some of the decals come out of the box unlocked, and some of them you have to, like, earn in the game. But there's a couple that are just, like, always unlocked unless we, like, manually unlock them for you with a code. And so that's what that was.
Oh,
you'll have to pass one our way after the show's off.
I will. Yeah, no, I can. I'll send you guys a couple more.
Sweet.
Couple more Crunchy Mouse codes.
That sounds awesome.
And in Shine Runner HD, you're going to have an SML logo unlockable.
Exactly.
Confirmed on the show.
Listen to the show for 10,000 hours and you get the achievement.
It'll be like a customized tattoo on the Shine Runner's arm.
That'd be awesome.
That would be cool to have, like, all the, because I know you guys did that, like, you tied all the achievements to an emblem on this game. That'd be cool if that game had, like, tattoos, and every time you unlocked an achievement, your character got a new tattoo instead.
That would be tight. I like stuff like that, like customization options that basically nobody can see because they're, like, you know, you'd have to get right up next to the character to basically see it. But
well, Shine Runner HD will have tattoos, unlockable tattoos.
Exactly.
And one of them will be the SML logo.
This game is getting better and better.
It really is.
Or is it getting worse? I mean, do you really want that logo in your game?
Eh, tomato, tomato.
Then again, the logo's nice. It's just the show.
Yeah, the show's kind of crappy. Not a fan of the hosts. But logo's nice. Yeah. Randall did a good job with the logo.
Yeah, I like the logo.
It's really all about the logo.
If you got a good logo, then who cares about the quality of the show?
Hey, I'm just waiting for the day that like the logo shows up in a game. Like we've had a special thanks in a game before. I've done a voice for a game before. The only thing left really is to just find someone gullible enough to sneak our logo in the game.
Wherever it may be, maybe it'll just be like hidden, so tiny, one pixel.
An unlockable tattoo.
I used to, like, when I first started working in the games industry, I was like an artist, and I used to always try to like sneak like my initials or like, you know, some like secret message to, you know, my girlfriend or something like that, like into the art that I was working on. And it would have to be some super obscure thing, like, you know, okay, if you like turn around and go the wrong way on this level and then you take a right and then you kind of move the camera so that you could just kind of see around the corner over here, you can see it like in a texture on the ground or something.
Yeah, that's insanity. How anybody would ever find that?
Right. Nobody would. Basically, the only people that ever saw any of those things were like friends of mine that I would like force them to like watch me while I showed them.
See, that's how I feel. Like, it would be so cool if how you have the unlockable emblems in Riptide, if I could just put in some kind of weird code that like only me, CJ, and like Chris or Bogue, who've been on the show, like we're the only ones who would know this code, that we could just pop it in and our emblem would just be the SML logo. That would be so friggin' cool to me.
Imagine going online and people just being like, how the hell?
What the hell is that stupid logo you got? Aww. It's my show. Your show's stupid.
Logo?
So, yeah, how do we work that out? How much do we have to bribe you?
How much money do you want?
We're definitely susceptible to beer and cookies and...
No lie, give me your address, and the next time my wife makes cookies, I'll ship you some. She makes these insanely awesome chocolate chip pudding cookies, where she makes it with, like, French vanilla pudding mix.
Wait, what?
They are so good. They are ridiculously good.
Give us the SML logo.
I don't even need the logo in the game. I just want to share the love of her cookies. And I've convinced her, like, every now and then, like, instead of just putting chocolate chips in, like, we'll put something out. Like, the one time we put Heath bits.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
Like, toffee crunchy bits. And she hates Heath. Like, she hates toffee. So it like pains her to make these, but every time we make them, everyone who has one is like, these are the best cookies I've ever had. Like, I fucking hate Heath. Why do you like them? Don't like these cookies. They're terrible. Heath sucks. So if you're a fan of Heath.
Those are the ones. So is it like Tidal Wave bubblegum where you like bite into the cookie and there's just a giant burst of pudding in the middle?
No, it just makes the cookie like super soft and moist, and it is it's almost like they're cooked, they're baked, but they have a texture of still kind of being raw-ish just because of how mushy the pudding mix makes them.
Uh-huh.
They are ridiculously good.
Yeah, I'm imagining it right now.
Yeah, just shoot me your address, and next time we make cookies, I'll ship you a box of them.
All right.
And that way, when Shinerunner HD rolls around, we'll have the SML logo tattooed on the one guy's arm.
No, he'll just put the picture of a cookie. It's like the SML cookie.
It'll be a lower back tattoo. If it's going to be a tattoo, it's got to be a lower back tattoo.
I was thinking maybe like SML cookie power-ups, you know, like
yes, drive the over chocolate chip should be in the shape of SML on the cookies.
SML won't get any kind of shout out in the game, but Ashley's cookies will.
Yeah, exactly. It's just gonna leapfrog. It's gonna, your plan is gonna backfire.
It's just gonna be Ashley points in the game.
It's just gonna be Ashley's cookies.
And I'll show her the credit, be like, look, special thanks Ashley Camisa and her cookies, and she'll be like, yeah, but they like the fucking Heath ones.
Yeah, exactly. I'll make a point of that. I'll be all like, Ashley's Heath cookies.
Only the Heath ones.
Only the Heath ones. They were delicious.
Oh, man. They're so, like, now I need to force her to make cookies again. It's been too long since she's made them.
See, it's like a whole chain now. It's like, now you're going to have to bribe her with something to make the cookies so that you can use the cookies to bribe us. It's like one of those point-and-click adventures where it's like, before you can go across the bridge, you need a key. And in order to get the key, you need a feather from a partridge.
Why do I have a broom handle? What's a broom handle for?
Yeah, exactly. I'm just going to carry this around because I know I'm going to need it.
As soon as you throw it away, like, the ogre asks for it, and you're like, son of a bitch, I knew I shouldn't have got rid of that.
And then you have to find it.
How shitty were those early PC games where, like, they told you nothing?
They were so hard. Those games are so hard. There's like, they're so unforgiving. Like, nowadays, it's like everything. It's like, oh, I can perceive with my algorithms that you're a little bit stuck and frustrated. Let me help you along.
Besides that, things seem to make more logical sense now with them.
You can't discard this really item. Weird. It might come in handy.
Right.
Fuck you, I don't want to hold it.
They've gotten rid of discarding a lot in those point-and-click adventure games now. You can't even get rid of items unless you use them for a lot of them.
How many games have a section of key items?
Or just a fucking hint button.
Yeah.
Right.
Although Monkey Island had a hint button, and that's an old one, so I guess there is some.
Yeah, true.
True.
Oh, man. So I know you don't have too much time left with us, and by that I mean you should probably have gone 2 minutes ago, but what else is next with Vector Unit? Are you guys taking a look at the Switch and all? Are we going to see Riptide GP on the Switch, maybe?
You know, it is something that we are thinking about for sure. We're super interested in the Switch. And especially because, you know, like we have our own game engine. Our engine is like optimized top to bottom for like everything from like, you know, Xbox One down to Android, whatever. And kind of in the middle there is like the like that NVIDIA Shield X1 hardware that like the Switch is built on. It's basically similar to like a Shield Android TV, and our games run great on that. So it actually would be really easy for us, just from a technological standpoint, to port to the Switch. We're talking to them about doing something for them, whether it's like Riptide or whether it's a Beach Buggy game. And other than that, we're going to announce, I guess now by Friday, we're going to announce Mousebot, and then after that, we're sort of toying around with a couple of different options, but we're probably looking at doing something else in the Beach Buggy
world. Oh yes, I never got to play the original, but I watched a lot of it from a streamer friend of ours, Shiz. He used to play the hell out of that game, and I loved the way it looked.
Cool. Yeah. We like that game a lot, and I mean, Riptide and Beach Buggy are, you know, are two sort of like favorite children. But
Riptide is one of my favorite children you've made as well.
And then Shine Runner is the one locked up in the basement that you don't talk about.
Exactly. Shh. What basement?
Yeah. Oh my god.
Until he comes bursting out in 2026 as Shine Runner 4K.
Shine Runner 4K with cookie tattoos. Oh, man.
Well, we've got that game figured out now.
Yeah, and then the only thing left is a Beach Buggy Renegade, the post-apocalyptic Beach Buggy game.
Exactly, the mashup.
Where you go to jail and then you come back as a Beach Buggy racer, trying to get your gold
back. An outlaw Beach Buggy racer.
Exactly.
I never thought a post-apocalyptic wave running game would work, but it works so well.
Well, it's so random that it actually works.
And I seriously, it's been months and I still don't get this. I need an answer. How the fuck does your game look so good for like 400 meg? What kind of witchcraft are you performing a vector unit to get such a gorgeous game into such a tiny file size?
It's the pudding. It's that we just cram it full of pudding.
That wasn't said to be insanity to me, though, when I saw that I was downloading the game and then it was only 400 megs. I was like, how? This looks like it should be so much more.
I mean, it's pretty... It's pretty efficient. I mean, we do a lot of, you know, like texture sharing. We do a lot of instancing where we'll like make one thing and then like kind of duplicate it. And each time we duplicate it, it only shows up in memory once and stuff like that. And all the lighting is real time, so we don't have to use like baked light maps. And there's lots of stuff like that that we kind of save memory on.
It blows my mind how good this game looks, how good the water physics are, how smooth and how crisp and clean everything is, and it is so tiny. I don't understand it.
It's the pudding.
It's the pudding.
Yeah, that's insane.
The pudding in the witchcraft, your
exactly.
Wizardry over there at Vector Unit.
Well, thanks, guys. I'm glad that you like the game and that you, you aren't too bent out of shape about the fact that it took an extra 6 months.
I'm the kind of person that's like, same with the people that were complaining about how PlayStation 4 just got external hard drive support. I'm just like, at least it's there now.
Yeah.
Who cares?
Right. Yeah, exactly.
It's here. It's here. It's good. It was worth the wait. It's still amazing. I think CJ said that it is basically a perfect game.
Yeah, I mean, so. I couldn't really find anything I hated. Even towards the end when I was getting frustrated at some of the very last boss races, it was still like, I was enjoying myself, and I eventually completed and got all my gamer score, and I was happy.
Cool. I'm glad. It does get pretty hard towards the end.
Yeah, especially those bonus races with all the bosses are just ridiculous.
Yeah, they are. they're really hard.
Fucking Firewater is the hardest track in the entire game when it comes to those things.
Yeah, and there's like one particular race that like actually we kind of meant to tune down, and then we just ended up leaving it. I think we might have.
I guarantee you, it was Firewater because that took way longer than the rest.
There's one particular one. It's the fire. It's like the it's in the Viper side mission where you're racing against all the cops, and it's like one of the elimination races in Firewater. It's like one of the last races in the game.
Yeah, that one was a whore. I hated that.
Yeah,
I mean it was fun, but it was what a. Ass.
Yeah. That one's really hard.
Yeah, it was. The thing was, it's like at the very end, he would always just the last guy would boost right ahead of me, and I couldn't figure out how to fucking do it because I just couldn't turn as well as he could.
But then you did it.
Yeah, I did do it. I did get it. So I eventually got it.
Deep down, how does it feel to be told that a race in your game is a whore? How does that make you feel?
Well, when it's being said by somebody that actually did stick with it and finish it and beat it, then it feels okay.
it's not like I'm hating on the game. That race was just, you know.
Yeah.
If I could give one complaint, if I have to put one complaint down, is that race was annoying.
Yeah, like, no. That
race, the race was kind of slutty. What am I going to say?
It's just, it gave everybody the win but me. I mean, come on.
But now you're part of an elite few.
Yeah.
Actually beaten that race down.
And beat every other race on top of it. And found all the Easter eggs. And some of those Easter eggs were quite deviously placed.
Yeah.
The one on Tropico on the side of the wall. Damn, that one was a...
Oh, yeah. You got to get like way up on the... you got to like boost way up into the air on the half pipe.
Yeah, that one was brutal.
Yeah, that one's hard because you really need to like get the angle right.
You know what I was doing the entire time? I'd miss it, I'd turn around and just drive backwards and then go and hit approach it again and just keep trying until eventually I got it. Didn't even bother completing the lap, so I was just like, nope, okay, I missed it, let's just go back. Still took a while, and I didn't know that there was a timeout on races until I was trying to do that.
Oh, God.
Apparently you can time out at 5 minutes.
All right, guys. I should probably head out.
All right. Well, Matt, thank you for joining us once again. We'll have to get you back on again sometime that you don't forget.
I don't forget. Oh, I'm sorry.
I'll have to bribe you with cookies to remember.
Exactly. But yeah, I had a really good time. I should send you cookies.
I mean, if you want. Are they going to be whores?
I'm not. Maybe.
They're all just going to be a bunch of police racing bikes.
Exactly.
That'd be funny.
Yeah. But yeah, thank you. It's always fun talking to you guys.
Well, let's set this up again sometime. Thank you once again for coming on and chatting with us. Do you have any final words to end the show?
God, all I can think about is Heath Chunk pudding cookies now. It's like I have nothing else. That's completely wiped everything else from my mind. So, yeah, I don't know if I do. I think that's it. I'm just sitting here kind of drooling a little.
Me too.
That's why he has to leave for real. He just needs to find something to eat.
I just got to shut something in my mouth.